This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we got the Bad the Dumb coming up this hour. Again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. All right, college football. We cannot shake Deion Sanders for the life of us, can we? I mean, it doesn't matter. What happens?
He appears everywhere.
He is everywhere. Everybody knows where the money is made in this business in terms of clicks and articles.
Well, almost everybody.
Almost everybody. And everybody wants to write a Deion article. Everybody wants to write a Deion, something Deion said or did or commented on or whatnot. And the latest is, I guess somebody asked Deion Sanders if he would take a lifetime contract with the University of Colorado, and Deion said no, which is the right answer, which is not a surprising answer at all. And somehow, some way, people are making this out to be a story. First of all, Deion Sanders is 56 years old. If he wants to do this for 20 years, he's very unlikely to do it entirely at the University of Colorado.
Right.
He could love Boulder. He could love living out there. He could love it. And Boulder's one of the most beautiful places in the world. But has anything about Deion ever given you any indication that he'd be content for 20 years in the same location doing the same thing over and over again?
I mean, he played two sports at once, kids.
Exactly.
He wasn't content with just being one professional athlete. He had to be two.
That's correct. Correct. Believe me. And he knows that, people think, would Deion ever want to coach in the NFL? Today, Deion might say no. 5 years, Deion might say yes. Well, you don't know. Don't take anybody's answer today as gospel.
But, I mean, I think that's for anybody. I know we're singling Deion out, but I think, even if you asked Lincoln Riley right now, would you sign a lifetime contract to be the head coach at USC?
He'd go, no.
No.
I don't know what my future lies and where it's going and who wants me and what opportunities may come up.
Yeah, and I do believe that there are certain coaches, like David Culley, when he coached at Texas.
Yeah, probably would have.
He seemed like the kind of guy, lifetime, I'll do it.
Absolutely. I don't even deserve to be here now. Give me a lifetime contract.
And you and I, we would take a lifetime contract to coach Colorado in a heartbeat.
I would in a heartbeat. I'd probably be there I'd probably have to dig me out of the grave and I'd still be coaching.
That's right.
But yeah, but this is the world we're living in now in college football. And I'll be honest with you. And a lot of it is because, and I hate to say it, but this college football season hasn't really popped yet.
Right.
It hasn't really exploded. There aren't a lot of great storylines. I mean, look, Georgia seems pretty vulnerable. Michigan is playing well, but hey, okay, fine. But Texas seems to be an awesome story, but we'll see. Ohio State's head coach is fighting with Lou Holtz. Florida State is playing with house money, and people are wondering when that ship is going to crash. All of a sudden, what you've got is the most entertaining personality at a school that is winning games and drawing millions and millions and millions of eyeballs. So anytime anybody says anything, he says anything, it becomes more news. What is more likely to draw clicks? An article about what Deion says about a lifetime contract or something Mike Norvell said at Florida State about something, right? It's a no-brainer. I mean, this is a 3-2 football team. They're not ranked. Their star player doesn't play. Right? They're going to go to Tempe to play Arizona State this weekend. And yet Deion is absolutely running college football right now in terms of its attention and media hype. And it's a lot of it is because he has his detractors, and a lot of it is because he has his supporters. And that's it. I think there is a polarization of the Colorado program. And I don't think it's personal. Do I think some of it's personal with Deion? Of course I do. I do think that there are people who don't like his style. I don't like the way he talks and has this sort of Deion primetime bravado. But I also do think there are people that were, old timers especially, were concerned about how this is going to be now in the world of college football. And people have to stress this enough because a lot of people are sort of making this mistake. They're saying things like, what an amazing turnaround. He's taken a team that won one game, and now they've won three in the first five of the season, or he won three in the first three of the season. But that's not the same team that won one game last year. He destroyed the whole thing. He brought in 50-plus new players. Like that's a new way of doing business to a group of coaches, especially, and the fans of those coaches that are now looking and saying, now I have to do that. You know, now my job just got exponentially harder because now people are going to be saying that a guy that I nurtured since he was a sophomore in high school that I went to go see, and I started recruiting him when he was a junior, and I got his mom and dad on my side, and he's finally chose us over the state school. He chose us over maybe his father's school, whatever it may be. And I got to tell that kid, if we go 2-10, that he's gone. I got to let him go. That I constantly have to be looking. I don't have a general manager. Like, think about that. Like NFL coaches don't want to do that job. Some do, but most NFL coaches don't want to do the job of overhauling a roster. They'll leave that to somebody else. That's a GM's idea. You make the roster, I coach the team. Baseball, the same thing. You make the roster, I manage the team. And now you're asking coaches to manage the roster and coach the team and manage the roster on a split second decision all the time. If your quarterback goes out there and throws three picks and they lose at home to an unranked team, I got to start thinking about what quarterbacks are out there that will be available for me to replace this kid. Like, that's the kind of pressure I'm going to have week to week because Deion did it. Because Deion overhauled an entire roster of a one-win team, and now $19 million is pouring into Colorado every weekend, right? That's a lot of pressure on these guys, and they used to do it a certain way. They had a business model that worked for them, and now Deion came in and went, "Nah, it doesn't work for me. I'll just bring in everybody I can." And I think that is what's making people draw their eyeballs to this program. And a lot of people love what he's doing. Love it. Love Deion. Love the bravado. Love primetime. All of those things. But when you see an article, he turns down a lifetime contract, which almost 100% of the coaches out there would do. It's not a news story. Of course, it's not a news story. But it isn't a news story in the era that we live in with the Buffaloes and Deion Sanders.
Well, that's because I think a lot of people are still trying to figure out where Colorado Buffaloes are. Yeah. Where exactly is Boulder? I mean, they're not one of the main teams. And I think you're absolutely right. I think the reason why Deion and his popularity is so big because, you know, I mean, does Georgia even really play? I mean, have they had a primetime game? Have they been the marquee game of the week yet?
Yeah.
And we're talking about the number one team in the country.
That's right.
I couldn't even
tell
you.
They're not drawing 12 million viewers.
Who have they played?
Right. They had a close game against Auburn this past weekend.
Right.
But more people were watching USC and Colorado. Right? I mean, that's the way this is. Like, again, in the localization of college sports, he's drawn national eyeballs to a program that right now is 3-2.
Yeah.
With two losses against ranked teams and that were expected.
And you would assume by the media coverage that they're receiving and that how people are talking about them on social media, they're 5-0.
Yeah.
And they're on their way. They're going to be in the national title game within a month or two.
And the great thing about Deion is he's won so many media members over that even after the game against USC, in which they came storming back after six touchdowns from Caleb Williams, right, and a defense that just allowed USC to go up and down the field until later on, Shador Sanders had such a good game. People were like, "Well, this isn't even a loss. Deion didn't even lose this game. What a moral victory this is." People who've told us for years and years there's no such thing as moral victories are now easily jumping into moral victories for Deion Sanders against USC. And I don't disagree with that. I think, look, USC, Colorado should have got trounced.
Should have been Oregon.
Just like Oregon.
Yeah.
And they didn't, right? People are saying the play calling was really bad at the end of the game, and it was. The slowness of the offense to get the play in, that's on him. But when he sat at Oregon, here's what happened. When he sat at Oregon and said, "You better get me now. This is the worst it's going to be." People were like, "Yeah, wait till you play USC. Wait till Caleb Williams gets a hold of this crappy defense." He backed that up by at least going, "Yeah, maybe Caleb Williams threw six touchdowns. My kid threw enough that we were in a one-score game at the end of this thing and had the ball." So they didn't get rolled like they did at Oregon. So he did back it up a little bit. But again, to have most of the media go, "It doesn't matter. Like, we're not getting off this train. It doesn't matter. Like, people will be interested in what happens in Tempe with Kyle Dillingham and the Sun Devils welcoming in Deion Sanders and the Buffaloes. People will eye that. Two unranked teams in the Pac-12 won't matter because he's drawing that kind of." Now, listen, Do I think it's going to get a little bit more interesting in Texas, for example, if the Longhorns beat Oklahoma at the Red River Rivalry? Yeah, it's going to get really interesting. Texas is making cases the number one team in the country. And it's going to get really interesting if they beat Oklahoma, a ranked team. And all of a sudden now the narrative might be, all right, let's start paying attention to where – let's start shifting our attention now as we get closer and closer to the committee's rankings of where we're at in all this, because we're going to be reaching the halfway point. And maybe Deion's a nice story, but let's be honest, we don't need 24-hour Deion coverage when we've got some things brewing in other parts of the country. Maybe, maybe. But I think people won't help themselves. And I've said this before, and I think there is still a part of the media – whether you're a talking head on TV or whether you're a play-by-play announcer or whether you're a writer or whatever it is, I think there is a level of there is a wanting to be liked by Deion. There is a wanting to have an association, a positive relationship with Deion that I think a lot of people in the media want to have still. So I think that a little bit of the over glossing coverage of this Buffalo's team has to do with that, right? And people aren't taking the kind of shots at Deion that they should if he had said so, if anybody else had said some of the things that he said, right? Like, he is contradictory. He says he keeps receipts, but he doesn't care what people think, right? Somebody said, obviously, Shedeur Sanders is your quarterback. I want to ask you about the backup. And he said, what do you mean, obviously? You're acting like it's nepotism. And the guy said, no, I'm not. Shedeur is absolutely the best quarterback of the team. He took offense, because you got to take offense to everything. But if anybody else had done that, you would see more arrows. I think there's a likable factor to it that doesn't do it.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue on a Wednesday. Glad you can be with us on Wake Up Call. All right, let's get the good of the day, my friend.
You know, the good of the day, that's good. I like it. I don't know if anybody else will. I thought this was kind of fun. But A's outfielder Brent Rooker.
Okay.
I know you know who he is.
Sure, because he's an A.
Because he's part of the Athletics. He decided to kind of chronicle all his favorite breakfast spots that he went to this season.
Okay.
And I just thought that was a really cool idea. He put out his top 10 list. He even told people what to order. And he says, I don't know if you guys enjoy this or not, but, you know, I'm kind of doing this for me. But he went to like 30 different places this year. And it was just something that... I don't know why. I just found it kind of fun and wonder why, you know, why don't professional athletes do this more often?
I don't, especially baseball players, because they're in a city for a good chunk of time.
Yeah, they're there for three days sometimes.
So it's a little different than if you're in the NBA and you kind of bounce into the city NFL, and you bounce out of the NFL. You're not really there for a considerable amount of time. But if you're in Cincinnati for a three-game series, you hit up the hotel concierge with, hey, what's some places to eat that are known for breakfast?
Maybe walking distance
from the hotel. Yeah, where can I go around this place that will give me good breakfast? And they go, oh, you want to try this place? And then he just blogs about it or does whatever he wants with it.
He just kind of put together a little list and said, hey, this is what it is. And, you know, I mean, like he said, I mean, it was mainly for him, but then he decided to, you know, share it with everybody else. And, yeah.
I love breakfast. I love going out for breakfast.
Well,
that
was the other thing pointed out, like, because baseball players really, you know, they can't ever really go out to dinner.
Right.
You know,
there's usually dinner provided
really.
For them. Yeah.
Right. I mean, sometimes they'll go out afterwards, but, you know, if you got a game the next day and you're not really much of a night guy or want your booty rest, you wake up early, it's like, okay, well, let's go get a good breakfast.
Yeah, let's go get some eggs and some bacon or some pancakes or some French toast or whatever it is. Great.
Yeah. So he chronicled, like, you know, the foods he wanted, the foods he liked most at the restaurants he had. And one of them, I'm kind of curious about, it's a Wagyu Loco Moco.
Yeah, okay.
Loco Moco is kind of a steak and eggs and rice type of dish. You know, little Hawaiian type, but this is with Wagyu beef. So,
which is awesome. Good for him.
Yeah,
I think breakfast for dinner is underrated.
You know what? Yeah,
I think more people should
see
breakfast
that.
For dinner.
Have you ever been to Cherry Creek in Denver?
I've been to Cherry Creek.
There's
Denver,
a restaurant called Del Frisco's.
I heard of Del Frisco's. I've never been there.
And that's one of the foods that landed on his list, and it's a French onion soup breakfast sandwich.
See, that's the kind of stuff I'm talking about. He should have a whole breakfast blog thing.
Right?
It's awesome.
French onion soup breakfast sandwich. Something you probably never would have thought of having.
It's probably got a little bit of that cheese that melts over the side of the bowl.
With the breakfast or the French onion flavoring.
Yeah.
Probably fantastic.
Probably delicious.
Probably need a lot of gum.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
So he's not going to like
maybe
IHOP
mint.
Or Denny's.
No.
They make really cool things.
Yeah. They're all places that, I mean, if you're from there, you probably have heard of it.
Right.
You know, I mean, none of the places I've never heard of. Because he didn't visit any place that I know, but, you know, I don't know.
I get asked all the time here in Nashville if I've ever gone to this place or this place or this place. I go, nope.
But isn't it funny, I remember when I living in San Diego, there were a few breakfast spots that I knew of. I would tell out-of-town people, like, hey, you know what, you should go to this spot. One was called the Potato Shack. It was fantastic, and it was just this little tiny spot. Line to get in was horrible because there was no seating on the inside, but, you know, the food was great. The pancakes were the size of a gigantic dinner plate, and the price was right for all the food in there, and you walked away feeling sick to your stomach.
Filled with breakfast food. Yeah, exactly. Well, good job. What's the bad of the day?
The bad of the day is that premature celebrations happen all the time, right, Tony?
Sure.
You know, we see it all the time, but for South Korean skater... I'm not going to try to, hopefully don't butcher his name, Young Chul Won, not only did it cost him the race, he was beat by a 100th of a second.
That's devastating.
Right? Because he celebrated too early. But it might have also cost him his exemption from having to serve in the military.
Okay, so he...
So in South Korea, it is mandatory for everybody... I think it's under by the age of 28, I believe, to have served 18 months in the military. Now, you can get an exemption, especially if you're an athlete, like if you're a soccer player or an Olympian, you can get an exemption from that. You know, musical artists, the Korean group BTS, I think that's what they're called. They all got an exemption from having to serve in the military because they're doing the thing. But every male... If you're not one of those lucky few, every male has to serve at least 18 months in the military. He had an exemption going because as an athlete, and if you get a gold medal, you get the exemption. If you're an athlete and you don't get a gold medal, no exemption.
Wouldn't you want to make sure you could absolutely get that exemption? Because doesn't the military service derail your training for
yes.
like the Olympics and stuff?
Oh, yeah.
So you would say, look, I want to be in the Olympics. I want to compete in the Olympics. So I better make sure I'm not going to the military, which is not going to allow me to train for the Olympics. They're going to train me to be in the military. You would want to make sure you landed that as best you possibly could.
Right.
Right? That you made sure that you locked that bad boy in before you celebrated.
Yeah, I mean, and the worst thing about this was that this was during a relay. So there's also two other people who are counting on you to bring home the gold to get that exemption.
Right. Now, every day that they're in the military, they can blame this guy.
Now, he does have another chance because, you know, he is 27 and there is another chance for him to get an exemption. Or, you know, no, he's younger than that.
Right. Well,
he's younger than that. So there is another chance. So it's a story. That's why I said it may have cost him his exemption.
Okay. So if that entire relay team has to go to military service, you know, some people on teams go, no, it wasn't one guy. We lost as a team. That could be the exact opposite.
Yep.
These guys would be like, no, the only reason I'm here is because Dum Dum over there celebrated too early and lost by 100th of a second.
I can just see the sergeant right now. Tell the other two guys, hey, guys, eyes forward, because they're just mean mugging him. Like, I should be having breakfast somewhere in a different country.
Exactly. Should be working on my Olympic dream, but now I'm stuck here with you, idiot. Yeah, it's pretty harsh, man. All right, do we have time for the dumb of the day?
Yeah, we can do
the dumb. Let's bang out the dumb of the day.
All right. Well, I mean, I have two.
Two? All right. We'll have to carry it over.
Yeah.
Carry it over.
But, I mean, if not, you know, we can just do one, and I can save the other one for another time. But because, you know, I carried him over from yesterday. But this one I love because we're starting to see a trend where bars are getting into the act of, hey, here's a promotion. Come in and, you know, drinks are on us if this happens. We did one in Wisconsin recently where for every game Aaron Rodgers lost, drinks were on him.
Right.
And technically he never lost. But a Chicago bar, the Clada Pub, I don't even know if I'm saying that right. They had a dumb promotion because they were guaranteeing a Bears win last Sunday or the drinks were free.
Oh, no. But you know what? Yeah, like, I'm glad it's in the dumb because I don't feel sorry for these bars.
No, I don't feel sorry for them either.
You know,
I mean,
you know the risk going into these things.
They got stuck with a $5,000 tab.
Yeah.
The bar itself, because, and they probably thought they were at home scot-free. Here comes a $5,000 payday towards them. And sure enough, no, Bears had to choke it up. Not only that, but they were out some money, too, because they were giving away free pizza at halftime.
Oh, well done. Well done.
So regardless if you won or lost, you still got free pizza.
I know it's a competitive world out there for the almighty dollar. I get it. But chill with the everything's free if something happens.
Why would you guarantee a Bears win, though?
Yeah.
That's the only thing. I mean, I know I get it. They were playing against the Broncos, but still.
Still, be careful. Be careful with guaranteeing Braves victories.
Yeah.
You know? What you want to do is you want to have, like, a guaranteed win thing where you say, hey, come to the bar, have a good time, watch the Bears. If they lose, we guarantee they're going to win. But if they lose, we've worked with other companies to give you a great coupon book of awesome businesses.
Yeah, get little prizes here and there.
Like prizes, like cool prizes. Like you go, would you like to donate this? We're doing a promotion. If the Bears lose, we're having a raffle. We're having this. We're having an auction. Whatever it is. But don't be like everything we just charged you for is free.
Yeah, if the Bears lose, instead of $2 for the raffle ticket, it's $1.
Right. And we won't have the raffle if they win. We'll have to wait till next time.
Yeah.
You know, and if they lose, then we'll have the big raffle for all this awesome stuff. Right? That's it.
We'll just roll it on over.
That's right.
But yeah.
Terrible. All right, the second dumb of the day is coming up next. So we continue with Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio. Again, we'll continue to look at the Major League Baseball postseason from last night, NFL coming up. And again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, continuing the good, the bad, and the dumb, we are in the second dumb of the day as we continue along on Sports Map Radio. And again, on Twitter, if you want to hit us up, at Tony D Radio and at Ron Culver. And that's Ron with two N's, please. All right, what's the second dumb of the day?
You know what? I hate to do this, but I got to give it to Kirby Smart.
Kirby Smart? What
Kirby
did Kirby Smart do?
Well, you know, Georgia hasn't been blowing people away.
Right.
They've had to come back twice, once against a certain alumnus of the show school.
Well, don't say that. Say what team it is, because we don't.
South Carolina.
South Carolina, yes. Because now you're making me feel like I've got to defend my school.
Well, you got to defend your school.
Yeah, I do.
They were up on the number one team in the country.
That's true.
They had the chance.
They did. They totally did.
They were climbing up the mountain, Tony.
24-14 against Georgia is probably the best we're going to do in terms of the big moment.
But according to Kirby Smart, right, when asked about, you know, are they really, because they're the number one team in the country on the AP poll and the coaches poll, are they really a true number one team? Kirby Smart's reaction was, well, I think every team in the SEC should be ranked.
Oh, that's silly.
You know, he comes off sounding like he's justifying why he struggled. Because he's like, even our lowest teams in the SEC, nobody wants to play them.
Nobody wants to play Vanderbilt? Are you 100% sure about
well,
this?
You know what? He may not think Vanderbilt's in the SEC. I don't know.
Right.
I'm throwing that out there. That's
UNLV.
My opinion.
Ask UNLV if they found Vanderbilt to be, you know, UNLV won that game like 40-37. And they really thought it was like, all right, very cool. Pretty awesome that we won that game. right? Wake Forest beat Vanderbilt. Stop it with this. Stop it with this. So, no, I mean, look, Georgia, Kentucky, Missouri, like, they're ranked. Florida was ranked. Tennessee was ranked. South Carolina was not. Alabama, Texas A&M is ranked. LSU is ranked. Ole Miss is ranked. Auburn has not been, I don't think, has not been ranked this season. Arkansas is not that good. Mississippi State's not that good. No, I mean, not every team in the SEC should be ranked. That's ridiculous. But, I mean, is he selling? He's probably selling his schedule as like we have a lot tougher.
Played a lot of really hard teams. I think he's trying to justify the fact that against non-ranked teams, Auburn and South Carolina, they struggled.
Right.
They struggled.
But you know the thing is that they're struggling, and yet if you just keep winning, it'll just take care of itself. We're not doing the style points thing anymore like we used to do in the day. There's four teams that get into this thing. If you keep winning and you win the SEC championship, you'll be in.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Just keep winning. When it was one versus two, style points kind of became a big deal.
Yeah.
People had to win by a lot.
And they really haven't had a tough schedule yet. And that's why, goes back to what you were saying before about, nothing in the schedule has really popped. And it's almost like Georgia has been non-existent this season.
Yeah.
Now, they play Kentucky this week. But, overall, they don't play anybody.
Well, I think I'm
looking at their schedule now. I didn't realize that, it's a really weak schedule.
Yeah. Going back to Deion for a second, do I think Deion Sanders would have popped in any year ever in college football? Of course. There's no question about that.
He popped at Jackson State.
Yeah.
I didn't even know Jackson State was a football team.
If you put him if you put him in the heyday of Nick Saban in Alabama being number one by a mile and whatnot, he would have still gotten the kind of attention that he's getting now. He's not filling a void. He would have created another sense. But it does go that there just isn't a feeling yet that the big college football season has really morphed into something overly thrilling. Clemson is down. Alabama's not down per se. They're 4-1, but they're ranked 11th. That means that means people think there's 10 teams better than Alabama in the AP poll. We are seeing teams that we know won't be around much longer. Like we're seeing good teams at 4-0, but they've got a tremendous schedule coming up. Very unlikely that they'll win a majority of those games. But what else do you have? You've got Pat McAfee screaming about Washington State is the only other thing that people are just consuming themselves with in college football. It's not, we don't have a Heisman Trophy favorite per se, even though it looks like it's Caleb Williams right now, but that will sort itself out down the road. But other than that, we haven't really got it rolling. I think it could start rolling this weekend with Texas and Oklahoma.
Yeah,
as October really kicks in, there might be other stories than what Deion is or is not doing at Colorado. But look, the Pac-12 in its final year should be a fun story to do. There should be a lot more in-depth look at some of the teams in the Pac-12 that will be landing other places.
And honestly, at the moment, they are because if you think about it, a lot of their teams right now are ranked, and I haven't felt that way about them in long time.
You've got Washington, Oregon, USC. You've got Washington State, Oregon State. You had UCLA not that long ago that was ranked. You had Colorado that was ranked. You had seven teams that at one point shared a spot. Oh, Utah. I forgot Utah's ranked. So you have six teams that are ranked in the Pac-12. Two that were ranked at one time this season. So the conference, which is completely disappearing next year, there should be a lot more focus on, hey, look at these teams. What are they going to do in their new conferences if this should keep up? And by the way, Washington State is a ranked team that doesn't have a home. What's going to happen to them?
Yeah.
Oregon State is a ranked team that doesn't have a home. What's going to happen to them? There should be a little bit more focus on that, but the Red River rivalry this weekend really could shape Texas. I said earlier that they might pop into the new number one team if Georgia doesn't impress. I forget who Georgia's playing this weekend. I think it's Kentucky. They got
Kentucky.
A ranked team.
So if they finally get a ranked team.
If Georgia wins, they'll stay number one. But Texas could pop. Michigan is fantastic. So
we're finally getting to. LSU, Missouri. Those are two ranked teams. That'll be a good one. We're finally getting into better games than what we've had. But, it's been It's been a weird college football season because here we are coming. It was week five, week six.
Yeah, it's going
into week six. And there's only been one major storyline. I can't think of that. Like in the years past, have we only had one major storyline?
And it's been that way since day one.
Yeah.
Right? It's been that way since week one, that week one game against TCU.
Well, you were the one who called it first and like, God, I hope he loses.
Yeah.
Because, it can't be this easy. It's this easy.
I didn't want it to be that easy. I wanted it to be like, hey, look, maybe you win seven games, but I don't want you to win the first one out of the gate. Just sort of remind us that maybe it is tough to go from, a Jackson State to a Colorado mm-hmm. and into the Big 12. But that was, it ended up being a pretty wild and fun game. And TCU, while not ranked, is a team that's, it still had weapons. It still was a good enough team. It wasn't the same team that went to the national championship game, but still.
Now, do you think if Colorado was just Colorado and it wasn't really getting the Deion effect, right? Deion was winning games, but it wasn't flashy or anything like that.
Right.
And he wasn't being flashy. He was just being a normal coach. Do you think they would still have been a story and we would have gravitated towards some of the other college football storylines that are out there? Or, because I'm just saying, like, if he wasn't brash and if he wasn't, arrogant, all this stuff that's kind of made Deion the center of attention. And it hasn't really even been Colorado. It's been Deion. We get mad when we hear announcers and reporters saying, Coach Prime, Coach Prime. Yeah. It's like, that's not his name. Until he legally changes his last name to Prime, it's Coach Sanders.
I think that,
would that have been a story regardless? Like, would it have been as big of a deal regardless? Or would we have found another storyline to latch onto?
Well, my question would be, what storyline would we latch onto? And I keep going back to, all right, Arch Manning isn't playing yet. I mean? Like, there's not a new coach, really, that's, like, there's not a new coach at Michigan or Georgia or places like that. But I do think that where Deion wins in the media battle is because if you're, Kirby Smart, let's just take Kirby Smart, for example. Most of Americans, most members of the media have not followed Kirby Smart, how he got to be the head coach of Georgia. There are some SEC scribes who knew of him when he was on Nick Saban's staff and whatnot. Mm-hmm. Same thing with like a Billy Napier, where there are very few people remember when he was a young OC at Clemson and then moved to. But Deion has been in everyone's life for 30 plus years, right? He's been a factor in something. He's been playing football, playing baseball, talking about football, now coaching football. And I think there is something that's attractive enough to media members who are like, this is a guy I really know. And it is addicting. And I said this before, it is addicting when the people you cover recognize you and you kind of get a little bit of a reporter high on that. Like when they go, Jim, all right, go ahead, ask your question. People kind of get, they like that. They're usually anonymous people, and a big time athlete or a big time coach is kind of pointing them out as if they have a personal relationship. Deion does that really well with people. He hugs media members. Like, he makes people feel welcome. And I think they would have taken that and said, well, I got to return something to this guy, right? He gave me sunglasses, or he gave me a hug, asked me how my kids were. And that's where you get the Coach Prime. That's where you get the over-exuberance, the accusation of bias in your broadcast and coverage. That's where it comes from.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
All right, so I made this point to my wife last night. She said, should I buy a Powerball ticket? The jackpot's now over $1 billion. And I said, oh, yeah, what the heck? Buy some Powerball tickets. But I said to her, do you remember the first lottery that was over $1 billion? Remember that? It wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
Now I feel like they're all over $1 billion.
Because they all get there, yeah.
I feel like they're all getting there. Like, I feel like this is like the 10th one that's over $1 billion.
I mean, it's 1.2, right? Or 1.4 or something like that. And that doesn't even, that's not even, I don't think it's even close to the record.
Right. It's one of the smallest $1 billion jackpot. Look, the 0.4 is enough to change your life completely in a way.
Yeah.
Forget the billion.
The cash out value. I mean, you know what? Hey, I'm going to end up buying a ticket today just because. But, I mean, the cash out value, I believe, like, if you just decided to get a one lump sum on the $1 billion prize, is like $400 million.
Unbelievable.
I think you can find, a way to live off that, right?
So you win $1.2 billion. And after taxes and their cut, you got to give up close to $1 billion.
I got it on Monday when it was like 1.0 something billion, and the cash out value was like 450 or 470.
That makes a little sense, because I mean, government's getting half, and then they don't give you all the money if you take the lump sum.
Right.
So if you want to take it over 20 years, you can get whatever's left over,
and then some's got to go to the schools, Tony.
Well, that's the portion of it goes to the schools. Isn't that how it works?
Sure.
No. No, in all
seriousness. No, I think it's supposed to.
You don't have to give your money to the school.
Right. No, I'm saying I think it does go to the school, but I'm not
like,
sure.
I think every ticket that's sold, a percentage goes to the pot and a percentage goes to the school. You're not responsible. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did I just misread that?
No, like I've never won the lottery, so I'm not sure.
But when you said you have to, some of it goes to the school. Am I responsible if I win to make sure a portion of my winnings goes to the school?
No, I don't think it's you.
I think it is
part of that collective pot.
Because I would hate to be like, I just won 1.4, and they're like, well, you know, $700 million goes to the school.
Right, and then
that's not what you advertised.
Depending on the amount of it, too, that some of it does actually go to the store where you purchase the ticket.
But again, is that part of your money?
I don't think that's part of your money. I think that's separated out. Yeah, I think, like, you know, say it's $1 billion, right? I think when it says lump sum that you get is like 400, I think you get a check for 400 million.
Right.
You know, and then there's
600. Most people take the lump sum.
Yeah, because, you know, if not, you're paid out over 30 years once a year. Why?
Well, that doesn't make any sense. You get the money and put it in markets, and you'll make more money coming back to you in investments than you ever will be on what inflation might be with that money.
You may end up paying more taxes on it than you would right then and there.
Exactly.
Even though it's going to be a large amount, you're not getting, you know.
That's now tax-free. Once the government gets their money and you get the lump sum,
you're done.
You just pay the taxes
on
the money
that you make
off of it. But I think out of
that $600 million, I think there's a, you know, maybe like $100 reserved for schools. Maybe it's, you know.
Right.
I know that the store you buy it in gets like a couple hundred grand.
Yeah, they get a little
depending on how much it was actually sold.
But I'm not going to lose sleep over it. If I win, I get my share and let everybody else deal with whatever there's left over. But it's like, it's crazy. Like, I don't, are more people playing? Like, how are we at this position where there's $1 billion, somebody wins it, and then very quickly we're back to $1 billion again?
It really is. It really is very quickly.
You know, it's like the first time it happened, I was like, you know, obviously I played it, and of course I didn't win, and I was like, all right, whatever. But I was like, when are we going to ever see it $1 billion again? Oh, in a week, like a week and a half, it was back up again. I was like, oh, is that what we're doing? Okay.
That's where it is.
By the way, you know what they always say when you win the lottery? First phone call you need to make to a lawyer. Don't call your mom. Don't call your dad.
Yep.
Don't call your brother. Don't call a friend. Don't call anybody. First call you make is to a lawyer. You get that all locked in. You make sure you're protected. If your state has an anonymity law, use that. You don't need every single person you've ever known ever contacting you about a sick dog or a sick child or whatever. And then they do say if you win a lottery and you get with a good accountant, he will take a chunk of that money and he will say, this is yours. Make sure you get rid of it. Take it and blow it. Do whatever you want with it. I don't care. Get rid of this money. Get it all out of your system. Because I'm not going to be a financial advisor where you're coming to me needing $1 million every other day. Go on your worldwide trip. Go stay at the most expensive hotels. Go eat at the finest restaurants. Buy a boat. Buy a camper. Buy a Ferrari. I don't care. Buy whatever it is. Take this and blow it. Then we'll talk about your house. Then we'll talk about some other things. But take this and buy something dumb with it. Buy a ride on the space shuttle for all I care. That's what you're supposed to do. That is what you're supposed to do. Because everybody is going to have that urge, but many people don't have the self-discipline, because you hear it all the time. I won the lottery and it ruined my life. And I think a lot of it is because they kept giving it away, And then they ended up with nothing. And then they look back and they go, I had all of that money.
Yeah.
What did I do with all of that? And I'm not talking a billion. I think if you reach a point where you make that kind of money, like it's you can, you get it with the right person, you'll never have to work again. But some people just win like $1 million and they're working within 3 years. They're like, I blew it all. I blew it all. Some people go, I don't care. I blew it all. I like my job. And you know what? I wanted to go take a yacht trip around the world for a year. And it cost me $700,000. But that's what they go, get it out of your system and then come back. And then there's a plan. There's a, like a lottery winner just bought like a house in California for like
40 something.
Yeah.
Million.
It's this gigantic monster house.
It was the last guy who got the $1 billion. Cause he won that one by himself. Usually when it's up this high, you usually get like three winners or something like that. But he was the only winner of the $1 billion. And yeah, he just bought like a $47 million home in LA.
If there was a billionaire club, well, I wouldn't even say billionaire because you're not going to be a billionaire if you win this lottery. But let's say an uber millionaire club. What status level are you if you're a lottery winner? Are you above and below trust fund baby?
You're new money, first of all.
Right. First of all, you're new money. Forget it.
So you're not right. In the club, really.
Right. So you've got people who are like, my parents ate grass. And I lived on $1 a month, and I turned this idea into a $1 billion empire. They're on the higher end of the hierarchy, right, at the club. Then there's probably other people that were like, I invested well, I got lucky with this tech stock and whatnot, and I gambled a bit, and I hit a home run with whatever. And then there's probably some other people down the line, like athletes, are like, hey, you know what, I made all my money because some rich person gave it to me through a contract. And then there's people who are like, trust fund baby, like my parents are wealthy. I don't do anything. I have no skills in life, but I got $500 million. And I think lottery winner would be below that. Would you even like, would it be far below trust fund baby? Because I got to think if you invented like PayPal, you're not looking at a lottery winner as an equal, are you, at that club?
No, because you had to work for it or you got lucky.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Even a guy that's like, you know what? I saw this young tech company and I just decided to invest in it and it ended up being whatever and I made a fortune. Like even then you'd look at the lottery winner and go, what?
Yeah, you guessed. You picked six numbers.
You probably had the computer pick it.
You just went in for the quick pick.
You probably didn't even pick it yourself.
Yeah.
You probably didn't even do some deep dive analytics into the lottery. What a weird thing. What a weird way to be rich. What a weird way to go from, like, I remember Mark Cuban's story about how he got, you know, his company went public. He worked his tail off. His company went, I think it was like broadcast.com or something. And he knew he was a billionaire. He's like, all right, I'm rich. But, you know, you put a lot of work into it. You can go from punching out at a job you hate to finding out you have $900 million coming to you overnight. That is too much. That's too much for the brain to process. That's not getting rich on a stock. That's not getting rich on an invention. Because you don't get rich overnight with those things. Like those things take work effort. They take patience. They take long hours. They take gambles. You kind of sleepless nights where you're like looking at your wife going, we could lose everything. We could lose everything. If this doesn't work, to go from, hey, me and my buddies are at the bar. We just got done an 8-hour shift. Yeah, you know what? We'll probably play some softball tonight. I'll just stop at the store and get a ticket. And the next day you're worth $700 million. What kind of transition is that? That's incredible. It's like, boom. Immediately you're like, oh my God, what do I do with this? No wonder people lose all their money. Like people who are like, I never had a dime. Now I blew $500 million. Anyway, so take some money tonight, everybody. When you win this lottery, make sure you spend it on yourself in some weird, bizarre, crazy ways to get it out of your system.
Yeah, and if you want to donate to Wake Up Call.
Right, exactly. We'll
make a special appearance inside your house.
Fun. Mike Tenier will join us, talk NFL, and then top five, bottom five.